by Proxy with Vivek Srinivasan. The problem with driverless taxis does not seem to be the technology, but the people using it. Hi, this week I'm going to be talking about driverless cabs. So a few years ago, when Uber was just getting started, Travis Kalanick was receiving a lot of heat from the drivers because he was not compensating them very well. Out of exasperation, one of the press conferences, he said most of these drivers won't even be needed in the next few years as driverless cars would take over the roads. Was then needed to walk back all of his words because there was a huge amount of hue and cry about how he's trying to essentially eliminate the drivers. Uber was one of the first movers on the driverless car technology, but they were preceded by Google. Google started their driverless car project in 2009 under their Moonshots division. And that driverless car project was eventually spun off into a separate company called Waymo. In the meantime, Uber tried a whole bunch of shenanigans where they tried to recruit people who had been working on the project from Google and eventually ran into a lot of court cases that did not end very well for them. Travis Kalanick got fired, and with the new CEO coming in, he wanted to just make sure he gets the company to profitability, which was his primary mandate. In the process, he shut down the self-driving division completely, and the two major companies that are left working on the self-driving business in the United States are Waymo and Cruise, which is owned by General Motors. Waymo has come a long way since its beginning in 2009 and now is offering regular services in California. In fact, Waymo has announced a tour across Los Angeles for curious residents because this is something new. They want people to try it out. They want people to know that it is safe and it's something that they can use. So throughout November and December, they will be running these tours where people can just hop into a self-driving car and have a tour of the city. Driverless cars are available in several cities in the US, and these services are now being utilized by individuals like you and I. Several journalists decided to take on the ride and see whether there is something interesting to write about or something different. And the great thing is that there wasn't much to report. For a lot of the journalists, it was pretty much like a regular taxi ride, except that there was nobody sitting up front. And they were able to use their apps, book their cars, the car would show up, they would get into the car, it would go where it had to go, drop them off. One of the journalists from New York Times who used the cab thought that the cab was extremely aggressive. But mostly the reports that I have read show that it's been as usual for most people who are getting into these cabs, and there's nothing much to report. Waymo is actually making rides available in Los Angeles, San Francisco, and Phoenix, whereas Cruise, which is owned by GM, is making rides available in San Francisco, Austin, and Phoenix. These two states, Texas and California, have been quite open in terms of accepting self-driving cars, and they've in fact created laws that allow these companies to function. How did that change come about? How did driverless cars go from a technological curiosity to becoming something that is mainstream? Well, that happened over a period of time, but those wheels were greased heavily by money as well. Both Cruise and Waymo have spent over $2 million lobbying state legislators in order to make it possible for them to operate in these cities. For them, these sums are really pocket change. They're very, very small amounts in their grand schemes of things. And if you look at how quickly the valuation of a company like Uber was able to rise on the back of a service like this, they know that the returns that they would get out of this is huge. So they went and greased the wheels, and Gavin Newsom, in fact, has been one of the strongest supporters for driverless vehicles. He, in fact, vetoed legislations that would have made it harder for driverless trucks to ply through California. Tech companies have been using their resources to good effect to make the changes in the laws come about. But data also suggests that it's quite safe to use these vehicles. Cruise, for instance, has put in a combined distance of 8 million driverless miles on its vehicles. Waymo has done more than 4 million miles. And when you go through all of these data points, you see that, you know, they have been performing quite well. There are reports of about 102 crashes that have taken place during, you know, this entire mileage that has been put in, which is about 60,000 miles for an average crash, which is the amount of distance that a person would drive in about 5 years. So the vehicles themselves seem to be as safe as, or maybe more safe than, having a human driver drive them. And that has obviously made it easier for legislators to approve of this kind of an experiment. And like that, driverless vehicles have crossed the threshold of being just technological curiosities and becoming something that is, has real world application, that is used by real people like you and I. But there is a human component, there has to be a human component, which is the rider themselves. And now the problems with having people inside of a vehicle where they have nobody looking at them is starting to become apparent, which is, there have been reports that are coming through in the San Francisco Standard of, you know, people actually having intercourse inside of these vehicles, because earlier they would have the driver and they would behave themselves. But there is no reason for them to behave themselves anymore, because there is nobody else in the vehicle apart from them. And many of the younger people who are in their early 20s have been using these vehicles very regularly to have intercourse where they might have, like, gone to some place earlier. And that really is the problem, because how do you maintain standards? How do you maintain cleanliness? How do you, would you want to use a vehicle that somebody else has had sex in? Is the question that is starting to go around. And those are very human issues. These are issues that are a result of people being different and people being the way they are. I don't know how all of this will get solved. I don't know how prevalent it will become, but these companies are starting to make a huge push to make this a standard thing that is available across cities. The other thing is that, you know, while countries like the US, Canada, etc. would probably deploy them quite easily, but, you know, deploying this in countries in Asia, in Africa, where the road infrastructure is probably not comparable, would be a lot more harder to do. It's going to be interesting to watch how this evolves, and it's also going to be interesting to see what effect it has on the automobile industry on the whole, because it has the potential to disrupt the automobile industry entirely. Because in a world where you have only driverless vehicles, you don't need parking spaces. It frees up an enormous amount of real estate. You can live further away from, you know, the cities, because it would take a standard amount of time to get to a place rather than, you know, you having to drive and face congestion, etc. So there are a lot of repercussions to this as time goes by. Remains to be seen how this scales up or how this changes the way people travel. With that, I come to the end of this particular podcast. I'll bring you another one soon. Till then, goodbye.